5 p.m. on WHPC 90.3 FM, so it's time for American Hit Radio.
I'm glad you told me. I wouldn't have known what that meant.
Oh, you know what time it is. On a Friday at 5 o'clock? Kidding? Of course you do.
I know. It's super happy hour.
Glad to have you over. Really, this is the best of happy hours. And it's good to have you aboard. Of course, on Fridays, American Hit Radio becomes How Music Changed. And for a good number of weeks now, we've been concentrating exclusively on the Rolling Stones. We are up to the time of 1971, 1972, there and abouts. Where are we exactly? When did this? Oh, yeah, okay. Well, Exile on Main Street was released on May 12 of 1972, specifically, recorded the year before. There was always a long delay with the Stones, it seemed, between what they were actually doing and when the stuff actually managed to come out. There's not much to say about the introduction for today's show. We kind of already did it last week. Last week, we began our coverage of the album Exile on Main Street. We played the first half of the album in its entirety, so we're really just going to finish up the album with today's show, covering the second half in its entirety, of course.
Awesome.
It starts with a song that became the second single off of the album. Kind of a Keith Richards solo cut, really, is what it is what it was. It's even what it felt like when it came out, because in 1971, you know, Keith wasn't singing lead very much for
not
the Stones.
Much.
And all of a sudden, here's a single, and it's Keith Richards singing the lead vocal. It became a hit, and it was a fun one. It was a great song. So it was kind of crazy to have that happen in 1972 when that single came out. If I said 71, I meant 72. Anyway, Keith writes a little bit about writing the song in his book, simply entitled Life. I read the paragraph where he discusses this song. One sublime example of a song winging it in from the ether is Happy. We did that in an afternoon in only 4 hours, cut and done. At noon, it never existed. At 4 o'clock, it was on tape. It was no Rolling Stones record. It's got the name on it, but it was actually Jimmy Miller on drums, Bobby Keys on baritone, and that was basically it. And then I overdubbed bass and guitar. We were just waiting for everybody to turn up for the real sessions for the rest of the night, and we thought, we're here, let's see if we can come up with something. I'd written it that day. We got something going, we were rocking, everything was set up, and so we said, well, let's start to work it down, and then we'll probably hit it with the guys later. I decided to go on the 5-string with the slide, and suddenly, there it was, just like that. By the time they got there, we had it. Once you have something, you just let it fly. So here's a track purportedly then by the Rolling Stones, but now you know the truth. Here's Happy. You know what I just did? You know what I just did?
What did you do?
I can explain exactly.
Someone's been hitting the happy hour sauce.
I have Exile on Main Street on CD, and I have the deluxe edition, right? Now, it's got two discs. It was a double album. I made the dumb assumption, which I knew better, that the second disc was the second half of the album. But of course, in this age of CDs, when you get 80 minutes on a disc, they have the entire...
It's just one CD.
Right. The entire album is on the first CD. The
oopsie
second disc
doopsie.
Is the bonus tracks. So let me say, we are starting here then at track 10 and working our way through. That will give us the second half. So if we get to track 10, we'll pretend that the past 90 seconds or so just never happened. Okay? Here's Happy.
Thank you.
very cool. Keith does a really good job of playing music with himself on that track, playing all the guitar parts and the bass parts and everything else.
Okay. Very good cool. job. Good job, Keith. Keith.
I didn't read the review for the album last week, so I'm going to do that now since I've got the Illustrated, Rolling Stones Illustrated record right in front of me, which has reviews for the earlier albums. This album may have been recorded under some of the most appalling conditions imaginable, remixed at least half a dozen times, and had its release delayed when Alan Klein made an ill-fated attempt to lay claim on it, to it. But despite these obstacles, Exile on Main Street stands as a hedonistic capstone to the Rolling Stones' first decade. However, it is much more than a perfunctory grand celebration. By virtue of the brutal honesty with which many of the 18 songs strip away the arch-romanticism of nasty habits and over-excess, it could be conceived as some kind of all-meaning grand gesture. Indeed, Exile on Main Street is the kind of definitive personal statement that a band would, if it had the option, choose to record as the quietest to an illustrious career. Exiled like fugitives in the claustrophobic humidity of Keith Richards' basement in the south of France, which probably explains why it was going to be called Tropical Disease. The Rolling Stones managed to produce their magnum opus, an album which not only they themselves, but their contemporaries have yet to surpass. Never has one collection covered all aspects of rock music with such exhaustive attention to detail. The quality of the material, the overall standard of performance, the Stones had augmented with Bobby Keys, Jim Price, and Nicky Hopkins, and the rich, full texture of the mix quickly proved to be highly intoxicating if savored at one hearing. Truthfully, this is the album that everyone wanted the Stones to aspire to, yet in doing so, the Stones far exceeded all possible expectations and rendered the results temporarily inaccessible to many people who never progressed further than Aftermath. Though many of the songs are, for the most part, superior to much of their previous album output, Exile is more than just a structured collection of chords, riffs, lyrics, and various rhythms. More often than not, it can be seen to be a chain reaction of inspired flashes of energy that produced the true ethos of rock and roll. A prime example of this being the double-quick, blood-to-the-brain rush of Rip This Joint. Indeed, the actual lyric and melody became of secondary importance in the violent backlash of genuine excitement. Jagger screams, guitar flash like switchblades, tenor sax squeals, a piano is jangled, and the rhythm section obliterates anything that gets in the way. Arguably, one of the most spontaneous and uninhibited moments ever to have been captured on a rock record. Upon closer scrutiny, it can be seen that Rocks Off and Loving Cup are not about sexual prowess, but about the apparent lack of it, with Mick Jagger, of all people, singing in the first person about impotency and thereby blowing his pose as rock's premier unisexual stud. Likewise, Casino Boogie and Shine a Light deal with the less elegant aspects of premature dissipation, while Torn and Frayed is the state of play once the Stones hit the trail. Sweet Virginia is yet another crusty road song, but it's mellowed by a country-esque mood. Aside from Keith Richards' highly optimistic rocker, Happy, the overall tone of Exile on Main Street is that of alienation and the desire to lay certain ghosts to rest. Perhaps there is no longer any real need to overemphasize the leering sexual bravado or the demonic posturing. Nevertheless, this album clearly demonstrates the Stones' thoroughly demonstrative musicianship, which, because of the subtle deployment of instrument and the unorthodox meshing of the mix, may have slipped by those people who prefer to be sledgehammered into total submission. Thorough investigation reveals Exile on Main Street as one of the best double albums ever made. How about that? Let's get right back to it then, with a song that probably is going to sound very inconsequential after all that incredible build-up. A simple little number called Turd on the Run. Red coat, I'm a cold tail, but it come on, fill my hand. There's two tracks back to back there from the album Exile on Main Street. You heard Turd on the Run, Into Ventilator Blues, both of them very blues-based. I think what you can tell by listening to those songs, that they more or less give up the game that the Stones didn't really come in with material.
Yeah.
You know? Keith Richards is the king of rock and roll riffs. I mean, between him and Chuck Berry, I mean, you think about think of a Stone song, usually the first thing you think of isn't the words, but you think of the riff. You know, you think da 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 da.
Right, or, you know, absolutely.
Or, you know, da 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 da, you know, Start Me Up, whatever. It's the guitar riff. So that requires a certain amount of forethought to be doing that. Like even the opening of Tumbling Dice, you know, that falling guitar figure.
Mm-hmm.
Like Keith said, he worked on that for days.
Yeah.
A lot of these songs, they just sound as though they were jams that sort of got,
absolutely,
that
very,
fell together.
Very jammy.
Right. There's like a looseness to it that certainly I'm not criticizing it as making it out to be something which isn't good.
Oh, but, I am.
Well, the thing is, like, but I would go so far to agree with you in a sense, Heidi, is that, you know, everybody raves about this is being by far the best Stones album of all time. Like, that review that I had read is so, you know, so many laudatory praise.
Yeah, sure.
Put on the album. But I don't know, to me, I just prefer Let It Bleed or Beggar's Banquet myself. I just think that there's a lot more effort, or the songwriting characteristics that define a Rolling Stones song, like a Jumpin' Jack Flash, Street Fighting Man. You hear that on those albums.
Mm-hmm.
And here, you hear that band basically, you know, not doing that, but trying to see what falls together naturally. I think that's a lot of the reason also why there's less posturing on this album. Like, there's none of this trying to be the bad boys, deliberately throwing together phrases and attitudes that are meant to insult society, you know, right in its face. This is really more of the Stones just manning up, being themselves. And I wonder if a lot of that had to do with Mick Jagger suddenly being a married man and feeling as though maybe it was not that good of an idea to be playing some satanic rock and roll drug freak. You know, maybe it was time to put those days behind him. So he was coming at the lyrics for this album from a little bit more, a slightly more thoughtful perspective rather than one of posturing. Just my take. And it's also only natural that they would lean on classic song forms and styles to come up with the ideas, since they didn't have anything written. Let's do a blues run. Let's do a blues progression and see where we go. And you end up with Ventilator Blues, like that last track. Or let's come up with a gospel concept. Let's get the girls to sing a phrase, and we'll build a song around a gospel concept, like this next song on the album. The fourth track was actually on side three of the record. This is I Just Want to See His Face. Thank you.
they became a jam band.
Obviously, a gospel bass is being used there, but it's another great example of a song on this album that is all flesh and no bones. You know, there's really not any structure there holding it together.
No.
It's just sort of like this jelly-like thing where they, move
it's
through.
Gelatinous.
Yeah, like a simple idea. The girl's doing that moaning thing in the background. Jagger comes up with a basic fundamental gospel phrase, don't want to, talk about Jesus, just want to see his face, becomes what he hangs the hook on, and that's it. And it works, but like I said, it's not the type of thing that's it's not radio friendly. You know what I mean? In that regard. Now, some of it, of course, was. There were some really well-written songs that were on the album. That's actually the track that finished up the side. So let's hear something that actually does have some bones in it, meat and potatoes, so to speak. This track is called Let It Loose.
Dressed up to do your harm, yeah. And I'm here to watch you do. Give her just about a month or two,
just about a month or two.
Things like I'm playing with you.
thought as I was playing about how we categorize music these days,
mm-hmm.
and what gets put into what, you know, what certain things are called. And it doesn't seem as though anybody puts out anything these days that is called rock and roll. You know what I mean? It just seems like that is it's
that's
way
a funny thought.
Too loose of a definition. Like nobody's, you know, what sort of a band are you? Oh, we're a rock and roll band. What? You know, it's like, what does that mean? And it's so bizarre. Like, what do you mean, what does that mean? It's what we all are. It's what we all do. I mean, like, this album by the Stones. Okay, uh-huh. Now, of course, it's classic rock.
Sure.
Of course. But that's because it's 40 years old, and it's become a classic album, and they've become a classic band. What would this album be called if it came out, though, this year? If it came out, wouldn't you probably want to call it Americana?
Probably.
Isn't that bizarre? Because it's got blues on it. It's got a little bit of gospel.
Right, yeah.
It's like, it's odd. I'm thinking, like, my gosh, this is almost like what Americana is in a sense. It falls into that
genre.
Americana is taking over the word rock and roll. That's really what it seems to be to me.
I think you might be right.
Interesting thought.
I think you've hit something there.
There's just one. Just one of my millions of meaningless things that keep me awake at night.
Well, you got to get some sleep, buddy.
Let's play it. Actually, you know what I want to do? Maybe before we play the track from side four. Graham Parsons was getting really close to Keith around this time. He had a lot. He was hanging out a lot at Nelcote, which is the name of Keith's, where this was all recorded, at Keith's home in the south of France, right? And there's a bunch of excerpts that tell the story about what that was like, and I think it's fairly interesting, especially in regard to how it affected the band, and more particularly Keith and Mick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll read this right from Keith Richards' biography, autobiography. Sometime in July, Graham Parsons came to Nelcote with Gretchen, his young bride-to-be. He was already working on the songs for his first solo record, GP. I had been hanging with him for a couple of years by then, and I just had the feeling that this man was about to come out with something remarkable. In fact, he changed the face of country music, and he wasn't around long enough to find out.
Mm.
It's really true. We had plans, or at least great expectations, Graham and I. You work with somebody that good, and you think, we've got years, man. No rush. Where's the fire? We can put, you know, some really good stuff together, and you expect it to evolve. Once we get over the next cold turkey, we'll really come out with something good. We thought we had all the time in the world. Mick resented Graham Parsons. It took me a long time to discover that people around me were much more conscious of this than I was. They describe how he made life uncomfortable for Graham, hitting on Gretchen to put pressure on him, making it plain he wasn't welcome. Stanley Booth remembers Mick being like a, quote, tarantula around Graham. That I was writing and playing with somebody else seemed to him to be a betrayal, though he could never put it in those terms. And it never occurred to me at the time. I'm just expanding my club. I'm getting around, meeting people. But it didn't stop Mick from sitting around and playing and singing with Graham. That's all you wanted to do around Graham. It would just be song after song after song. Graham and Gretchen left under some bad feeling, although it must be said that Graham wasn't in great physical shape. I really don't remember the circumstances of his departure clearly. I had insulated myself against the dramas of the crowded household. But back then, with Graham, was Mick feeling excluded? It wouldn't have occurred to me at the time. Everybody was moving around, meeting different people and experiencing things. And I don't know if Mick would even agree with this. But I have the feeling that Mick thought I belonged to him, that I didn't feel like that, and I didn't feel like that at all. It's taken me years to even think about that idea because I love the man dearly. I'm still his mate, but it makes it very difficult to be his friend. Here's one of the actual honest-to-goodness songs that they did write together. Jagger Richard composition, of course. This is called All Down the Line.
Thank you.
factor on this record. There's no denying that this was definitely heroin-induced in so many ways. Keith was really, really strong into it, and he was really acting as the producer of the sessions because it was all taking place in his house. He talks about it openly in his book, so I'll read that bit now about Keith and drugs. The smack helped my siege mentality. It was my wall against all of that daily stuff, because rather than deal with it, I shut it out to concentrate on what I wanted to do. You could go out and about totally insulated. Without it, in certain cases, you wouldn't have walked into that room at that time to deal with something. With it, you could go in there, brazen it off, and be very smooth. Then go back and get the guitar out and finish what it was you were doing. It made everything possible, whereas straight, I don't know, there were too many things going on. While you're insulated like this, you live in a world where other people go round with the sun and the moon. They wake up, go to sleep. If you break that cycle and you've been up for 4 or 5 days, your perception of these distant people who have just got up, who have crashed out, is very distant. You've been working, writing songs, transferring tape to tape, and these people come in and they've been to bed and everything. They've even eaten stuff. Meanwhile, you're sitting at this desk with a guitar and this pen and paper. Where have you been? It got to the point where I'd be thinking, how can I help these poor people who have to sleep every day? For me, there's no such thing as time when I'm into recording. Time changes. I only realize that time's come into it when the people around me are dropping. Otherwise, I'd go on and on. 9 days was my record. Obviously, eventually, you hit the deck. But that perception of time, Einstein is pretty right. It's all relative. Here's Stop Breaking Down.
Ain't clown. You don't do nothing but tell.
based song there, Stop Breaking Down. We're playing Exile on Main Street in its entirety. We are almost done. Only two tracks left to go. If you're interested in this series, the How Music Changed series, if you want to hear the first half of our coverage of Exile, or maybe you want to hear the entire coverage of the Rolling Stones, or maybe you want to go all the way back in here, every single show we ever did.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Wouldn't you, you know, I'm sure there's so many of you out there that are dying to do exactly that. And if that is the case, I'm here to help you. We do have a website. We save all this stuff. Every one of these shows gets loaded up to our website for instant listening if you'd want. So if you check out, just search for AmericanHitNetwork.com, www.
On the interwebs?
AmericanHitNetwork.com, and you'll see, you go right to our homepage. If you just search on American Hit Radio, the same thing. You're gonna, it will be the first thing up in any search engine that you'd use. And right there on our homepage, you'll see our Wednesday show on the left side of the homepage. Our Friday show is on the right side of the homepage. That's today's show. And if you want to, you can basically, you'll see all the most recent posted, the most recently posted shows sitting right there. If you want to go a little deeper, you click on see all shows and you just opened up Pandora's box.
Okay.
Like I said, underneath each one of those is about another 300 or 400 shows for each day, going back to the beginning. Actually, it does make some sense for the Friday show, this show, to go back, because that's what How Music Changed is about. It's a collection, literally a series, that the shows are related. So if you're interested, help yourself. I'd be very happy if you did. Meanwhile, let's get back to where we were. We got two songs left, so let's play yet another kind of a gospel-based number from the album. This is the second-to-last track on the record, which is to say the song before the closer on side four. If you were a vinyl fan, this is called Shine a Light.
So you stretched out in room 1009 with a smile on your face and a tear in your eye. Oh, come see. Get a light on you, my sweet honey love. Over to a jangling dynasty, thank you for your ride. Every woman that you meet, could I say, get a high.
Well, there it is. As Ron has so literally pointed out, that was the penultimate track from the album, which brings us to the ultimate track, which is probably as good a time as any to talk about how the sessions sort of ended, again, under total disaster, according to Keith again from his book. It had reached the papers that the Stones were under investigation for dealing heroin.
Oh, boy.
Which began a whole long saga. The cat, as it were, was out of the bag. Aha, a heroin problem in the group and in the music industry at large. It came with the standard slanders, such as Anita peddling heroin to minors. Many witches' tales went into circulation about bad things going on at Nelcote. And the story wasn't over in France. We went to L.A., but in our absence, in the middle of December, the police raided Nelcote and found what they were looking for. Though it took them a full year to bring charges and a warrant for the arrest of Anita and me. When it came, they found us guilty of drug possession, fined us and banned us from entering France for 2 years. All those peddling charges had been dropped, and I finally could stop paying the rent on Nelcote, tearing up $1,000 bills. So on to the next phase, then. We'll be back next week as we move forward in deeper into 1972 and 1973, which is the song Angie and the album Goat's Head Soup. And, of course, continual drama. This is the Rolling Stones. Meanwhile, here's the last track. It's called Soul Survivor. Take care, everybody.